Chapter 2. Pat was right. The media scrutiny does get worse. On the day of the lottery, Sid's extended family gathers at their house. Sid's exhausted, and he just wants it to be over. He wants to know and have it done with. He wanders the house until a little bit before the lottery begins, and then sits down on the couch. Taylor snuggles up to his side. He wraps an arm around her shoulders, and tries not to bite his lip when the camera's on them. Gary Bettman announces the lottery in reverse order, so Sid has to endure the long list of teams to which he will not go before the first pick is announced. With each envelope Bettman opens, there's another team out of the running, but beyond, not Pittsburgh, he couldn't have said what any of them were. By the time they get to the top 10, everyone in the room is leaning forward like it's a shootout, and the closer you lean, the more you can will yourself to the next round. His dad makes a noise under his breath when Montreal is called fifth. But it's done, and even if Sid knows he's disappointed, it's another team closer. He half expected Pittsburgh to be called 30th right away, but it's almost worse to have made it this far if it's not... the Wild? The Hurricanes? It's just Anaheim and...
Sid!
Taylor says, pulling at his arm.
Sid!
Bettman says... We're going to switch it up. And the envelope marked 1 is in his hands, right there, and it seems like the sentence lasts forever. The number 1 overall selection in the 2005 NHL entry draft belongs to... He opens it so slowly, fumbling it around, and it looks like... He says... Pittsburgh Penguins. Sid's clutching Taylor so hard and tight it has to hurt, but she just says,
Sid, you're going to be a penguin!
Over and over, and the phone is ringing and everyone is talking, and Sid finally lets himself breathe. The most surreal part of the day is the phone call from Mario Lemieux himself. Sid has met Mario, had an unbelievable dinner with him and Ty Domi a few years ago, but that's worlds away from Mario telling him there's a place for him in Pittsburgh, a city waiting for him, and a franchise to rebuild.
I'll see you at the draft, Sidney.
Mario says.
We have a lot to talk about. I'm sure your family wants to have you back now. Give them my best wishes, and let them know we'll speak soon.
His family's all staring eagerly at him, like if they're quiet enough, they'll be able to hear Mario too. I will. Thank you, Sidney says. I look forward to seeing you on draft day. And thank you, this was my dream. It's probably a little too personal, not professional, but it just slips out.
We're going to do great things,
Mary says with calm, cool confidence, and Sid believes him wholeheartedly. The week between the lottery and the draft is full of all kinds of obligations, including important conversations with Reebok and Frameworth, mostly handled by his father, Pat, and a team of lawyers. The thing he's most excited about, other than the draft itself, is the hockey clinic on Friday. It's always fun to see the kids working on their skills, and it'll be fun to get on the ice with Jack again and meet some of the other guys. Benoit Pouliot catches him and, after some small talk, says,
Pittsburgh, man. You're lucky. I was hoping they'd get second pick or something.
Sid's throat closes up for a second, thinking about the nightmare he had just that morning about that. Yeah.
You like Pittsburgh?
He manages. Something must show on his face, because Pouliot blinks and shrugs.
It doesn't matter, he says.
It takes it a moment, but he manages to check back in and offer something to the conversation, conscious of the mic clipped to Pouliot's jersey. Jack skates up after Pouliot has left, and nudges Sid with his stick.
You okay?
Yeah, Sid says, taking a deep breath and being absurdly grateful that Jack is here with him. It's just hard to believe, you know? I don't know if I'll be able to until it's over. Jack is maybe the only other person besides Janya who understands how much this means to Sid, and Sid feels bad complaining to him when he knows Jack has no idea what will happen to him tomorrow. But Jack just claps a gloved hand on Sid's shoulder and says,
Yeah, man.
The cameras make everything easier and harder, but it's probably good Sid has something to focus on, something to remind him to be collected and professional. When the cameras are gone, he winds up wrestling with Jack over airing out his reeking gear. It probably makes both of them feel better.
"Hey, Sid," Jack whispers quietly into the dark that night. "I'm really happy for you. Not just going first overall, but getting Pittsburgh. You deserve it, man."
Sid bites his lip until he thinks he can talk normally.
"Jack, you're my best friend," he whispers back.
They both heard rumors that the Ducks were going to take a forward, which means Ryan, but you're just great, okay? You know that, right? Whoever picks you tomorrow, they're so lucky.
There's a long pause, and then Jack says,
"Yeah, you're pretty okay yourself."
He can't help the laugh that bursts out of him, and Jack laughs too. And though Sid worries he'll have a hard time falling asleep, he drifts off easily to the steady hum of the air conditioner. The draft morning is surprisingly quiet. They both get up early to work out, and then lounge around. Sid wonders if he has time for a quick nap before the cameras show up. A glance at the clock reminds him about time zones. He realizes that by the time the draft is over, it'll be Jenny's birthday. He's glad he brought his laptop, which he and Jack have mostly been using to watch DVDs, so he can turn it on and open up his email. It's quick work to copy and paste "Happy Birthday" in Russian, but he has to think of what else to write. He doesn't think Jenny is even getting these emails, but he can't stop sending them. On the chance that Jenny is reading them, on the chance that Jenny is having more middle-of-the-night doubts and can't or won't call him, Sid writes, "I'll give you your present when I see you. I'll make you a cake. It probably won't taste very good, but I'll try. Just come to Pittsburgh. Please." He sends it just a few minutes before the camera crew shows up again, apparently to film Jack wandering around in a towel. The NHL seems like it might be kind of weird like that. The draft itself is a blur. He sits at a round table with his parents until his name is called, and then he's hugging his parents, and his mom is tearing up, and when he gets up on stage, Maria Lemieux and Craig Patrick are waiting for him. There's a jersey with his name on the back, and he holds it with nerveless fingers for a picture before pulling it on. He's smiling so hard he feels like his face should hurt, but it doesn't. All his hard work led to this moment, and he thinks he might just smile forever. He gets whisked away for interviews and photo shoots and more interviews, and when he sees Jack, he hugs him tight, because Jack went third to Carolina, and Sid's so, so proud. "You did it," he tells Jack. "You're so awesome." Jack squeezes him back. Bobby Ryan may be looking at them weird, but whatever. That's not as important as Jack murmuring in his ear, "You're gonna tear it up. You're awesome." It's an emotional day, but the thing that makes him come closest to losing it is Mario leaning forward to say, "I don't know if you've given any thought to your housing situation in Pittsburgh, but I talked it over with my family, and we'd like to invite you to stay with us." Sid knows his mouth has dropped open stupidly. "What?" he manages eventually. "We have a couple of kids about your age. We think it'd be a good fit, but I'd understand if you wanted to..." Maria starts, and Sid waves his hands frantically.
"No, no, no," Sid says quickly. I can live with you?"
Maria's smile isn't teasing. It's just happy looking.
"If you'd like to," he says.
"Yes, thank you. Thank you so much," Sid says,
probably like a big weirdo, but Mario Lemieux wants him to come live with him and play hockey with him. He keeps thinking about it through the rest of the day, doing more interviews, having dinner with his family. When he's finally collapsing in bed, it hits him again that he's going to live in Pittsburgh with Mario Lemieux and play hockey and get paid for it. Even though he knows Jack wouldn't tease him about it, Sid just has to laugh into his pillow, giggling helplessly until he can hardly breathe. It's so unbelievably, wonderfully amazing, and Sid's hand drifts up to touch his necklace
before he falls asleep.
He still feels pretty amazing the next morning at breakfast. He's laughing with Taylor when Pat puts a hand on his shoulder and says,
"Hey, can I talk to you for a minute?"
Sid's stomach lurches. "Is everything okay?"
"Yeah, yeah,"
Pat assures him.
"It's not about you."
He can feel his eyebrows rise, but he excuses himself and goes off with Pat, who doesn't say anything until they're in Pat's suite.
"You asked me before about what was happening with Yevgeny Malkin's contract,"
Pat asks, and Sid can't help but think that Pat was wrong before. It might not be about him, but this is personal.
"Yes," Sid says quickly. "He asked me to pass this along to you,"
Pat says, reaching for a folder on the table and handing it to Sid. Sid opens the folder, and there's a short letter from Zhenya. It's half in English, which makes Sid wonder how long he took to write it, even though all it says is,
"Sorry like this. I won't always see you soon."
He'll have to wait until he's at his computer to figure out the rest. It sounds... There's a sick ball of worry in the pit of his stomach, and he looks up at Pat, who looks a little concerned himself.
"Is he okay? Has there been trouble with his contract?"
Sid asks, trying not to crumple the letter as his hands tense.
"Frankly, yes,"
Pat says. Sid feels like the rug has been pulled out from underneath him. It's one thing for him to have doubts and concerns. It's a whole different thing for Pat to confirm it.
What?
Sid asks shakily.
"Yevgeny asked me to give you the letter, and to explain what's been going on as JP and I have tried to end his contract with Metallurg and negotiate one with Pittsburgh,"
Pat says. Sid's breath catches on the word "tried," and he bursts out,
"Is he coming? Is he not coming?"
He sounds panicked, even to himself, but he can't take it back.
"We're trying,"
Pat says, slowly, carefully.
"At the end of Metallurg's season in March, Yevgeny submitted a letter of resignation to management, which was rejected immediately."
"Rejected?" Sid repeats blankly.
"The GM ripped it up in front of him, told him not to tell anyone what he'd done. Yevgeny told me what happened when I asked, but he was, understandably, upset."
Sid feels like someone is pressing on his chest. His throat's thick.
"We suggested he go to Worlds, and while he was in Austria, we tried to see if we could convince them to change their minds. But Yevgeny said he was under constant pressure from the coaching staff and watched closely to make sure he didn't try to leave."
Pat pauses, brows furrowed.
"Are you all right, Sidney?"
Please, keep going,
Sid manages, hands clenched in his shorts. Pat eyes him for another moment, but goes on to say,
"They offered him a new contract when he came back and took his passport. We advised him to lie low, that we'd prolong negotiations as long as we could while trying to explore avenues. The team was restricting his unsupervised time, and to reduce pressure on him, we suggested he limit his North American contact, especially with anyone who'd be perceived as pro-NHL, like you."
The idea that he was making things more difficult for Zhenya, even if he had no way of knowing because Zhenya hadn't told him anything. He's heartsick and hurt and overwhelmed.
"It became increasingly clear that we weren't going to make progress with the club itself, but with the rumors of the CBA, we thought they might reach a league-wide agreement to ease these type of transfers. Otherwise, we might have tried to have him leave during training camp in Germany, but we thought it would be best to make sure we did due diligence here. Bettman is meeting with the IIHF and the Russian Super League today to try to negotiate, but if that fails, we're going to have to use our backup plan, and Yevgeny's expressed some concerns about it. Well, concerns about you."
"About me?"
"Part of the backup plan involves Yevgeny signing a new contract with Metallurg."
Sid can't push down the instinctive horror he feels hearing those words.
What?
He demands. Pat holds up his hands placatingly.
To get his passport back, Yevgeny will need to give every appearance of being committed to the team. Like I said, we hope it won't come to this, but if the negotiations don't go anywhere today, you're going to see news stories about Yevgeny Malkin re-signing with Metallurg, and Yevgeny insisted that I tell you about it before you saw that.
When he imagined seeing that kind of headline on TSN out of the blue, after weeks of no communication other than the one phone call in the package, Sid feels so grateful that Jenny thought of him, thought of how he would feel.
But he's coming, right?
Sid asks, suddenly struck with the awful irony of the situation. He's going to make it to Pittsburgh after all, but now Zhenya might not.
Pat sighs, loudly. We're doing all we can, Sid. I don't want to make any false promises here. But hey, Sid.
Pat claps a hand on his shoulder and squeezes it.
No one is giving up, and neither should you. I'll keep you posted. I promise.
Thank you, Sid says, trying to force himself to breathe normally. I mean that, Pat. Thank you.
Pat shakes his head. I know I sent that first letter for you, but I have to say, I didn't think you guys would ever get so close.
He says, and Sid isn't sure how to take that, but Pat smiles.
No, I think it's a good thing. Good for both of you.
Sid hopes it is. All he can do now is wait. He is a week and a few days at home. He spends time with Taylor and plays ball hockey with his buddies in the neighborhood, who he's only spent a little time with since he left for Shattuck. They're still good guys, and hockey's still the same, so it's fine. He likes getting the chance to play goalie, likes putting on the scuffed-up cast-off pads that came from someone's brother and taking his place in net. It's hockey from a different vantage point, and this way, everyone has fun. One afternoon, he's curled up on the couch watching Pokemon with Taylor, and Sid has a weird thought. When he was in middle school, all his friends had Pokemon cards, but Sid didn't, because all the money they had went to his hockey. Everything was for him to get to this point. "What do you want to be when you grow up?" Sid asks Taylor.
"A detective,"
she says promptly. Then she scrunches her face up, considering.
"Or a vet."
Sid manages to smile only a little.
"Okay,"
he says. Whatever she wants to be, he'll do his best to help her get there. He tries to appreciate every day he's home, but when he hears that Yevgeny Malkin has signed a new contract with his hometown club, he just feels sick and anxious. He never takes off his necklace, and he wears Zhenya's shirt to bed every night. Otherwise, there's nothing he can do except hope. He still writes Zhenya emails, carefully devoid of any suggestion that Zhenya is trying to leave, just in case. He tells Zhenya about winning a game of tennis, about helping his mom bake cookies for a fundraiser. It's all ordinary stuff, but he hopes Zhenya knows what he's really saying, which is that he still wants to talk to Zhenya all the time. He's packing when his mom knocks on the doorframe to his room and hands him new packages of underwear and socks. "Mom," he says, half embarrassed, half grateful. She comes in and tucks the tag on his shirt back in. "You be a good house guest," she says. "Be sure to help out. 4 kids is a lot, and you make 5.
"I'm not a kid," he protests. "I'm 18 now."
"You are," his mom sighs, and then she hugs him. "When did that happen?"
"Yesterday,"
he says. She gently smacks his shoulder. "Smarty pants," she chides him. "You can always call us, okay? No matter what." "I know," he says, and squeezes her tight. She sighs again, and steps away to fuss with tucking the package of socks into the corner of his suitcase, even though she knows he's just going to end up moving it anyway.
Should I be on the lookout for any more mail from Russia?
Sid flushes.
I hope not. She looks at him, her brow furrowed. He moves the package of socks. I hope I won't need any more letters, he mumbles. His mom takes a deep breath. Well, be careful, honey. I know your dad talked with you about things, but it's important to be safe.
Mom, he says, face flaming. I'm not...
His mom pats his arm, but she doesn't particularly look like she believes him. He did send you an awful lot of letters, honey. Sid has a moment of wondering how she knows it's a he when Zhenya's return address was always in Cyrillic, but he guesses the handwriting could have given it away. He's my friend, he says eventually.
Good, she says briskly. When you finish up here, come downstairs and help me with dinner.
Okay, he says. He feels relieved when his mom leaves the room, conversation apparently over. The relief lasts until after dinner, when his dad comes to his room and shoves a lot in bags at him. Sid looks inside, sees it's a package of condoms, and wants to die.
Dad,
he whines. His dad plainly isn't having any of it.
You be safe no matter what,
he says gruffly. His parents are both obviously wrong about Zhenya, and he still wants to never, ever talk about this. But when his dad pulls him into a hug, Sid manages to say, Thanks.
You're a good kid,
his dad says.
Your mom and I just want the best for you.
I want to make you guys proud, Sid says.
You will,
his dad says.
You do.
I'll try my best, Sid says, because he always does, and because there's no way to pay his parents back for everything they've done other than to give it everything he's got. Sid arrives in Pittsburgh on a beautiful, perfectly sunny summer day, or so the captain of the plane says as they prepare to land. There's a fluttering nervousness in Sid's stomach as the plane taxis. It's not because he's leaving home, but because when he called Mario to let him know the plane was on time, Mario made his apologies, stuck in a meeting, and said,
Natalie and the kids will come pick you up.
He's never met Natalie Lemieux, but he's pretty sure she'll be just as nice as Mario. He's more worried that the kids won't like him. Which is why he's pretty surprised when he gets to the baggage claim, and there are two little girls holding up a sign covered in glitter that says, Sydney! In giant bubble letters. He wonders for a moment if it's for someone else, but when the girls see him, they start waving the sign frantically. The younger-looking of the two runs up to him and says, Hi, I'm Stephanie. That's my sister Lauren. Mom said to help you with your stuff. It comes out in an excited rush, all in one breath. By the time she's done, Lauren has walked over. Hi, Sid. I'm Lauren. It's nice to meet you, she says, very deliberate, like she thought about what she was going to say to him while they were waiting, maybe. Mom is in the car with Austin and Alexa, so as soon as we have your stuff, we can go. Stephanie is a barely contained ball of excitement, and Lauren looks like she's trying really hard to be cool. Sid is stupidly charmed by them both, maybe because they remind him of Taylor. Stephanie is telling him all about her hockey team when the baggage carousel buzzes into life, and Lauren jockeys her way forward to get a good place in front of the opening. Oh, all my stuff is really heavy. You'd better let me grab it, Sid warns her. Lauren looks like she wants to protest, but she just hip-checks Stephanie out of the way to grab the handlebar in the luggage cart.
Okay, I'll push that,
she says determinedly. Stephanie pushes back until they both have a handle on it.
We'll push, she says. What's your stuff look like, anyway?
Well, I've got a big Reebok gear bag, Sid says, eyes on the belt. But the rest of it is basically just the same black suitcase as everyone else has. Boring. Sorry.
That's okay,
Lauren says, clearly trying to be gracious.
We'll make you some cool tags or something, Stephanie says. I'm really good at drawing the Penn's logo. I can totally do it.
Thanks, Sid says, grinning. It seems like they made their minds up to like him before they even met him, which Sid is grateful for. He spots his first bag, and from the weight of it, it's the one with his shoes and books in it. The cart squeaks ominously when he slings it on there, but it doesn't fall off or hit the girls or anything. The second one is just a few bags behind, but it takes another few minutes for his gear bag to show up. By the time he has the cart loaded, Lauren is peeking over the top of the three bags together, and he can just see the top of Stephanie's head. They shove at the cart, but between the weight of the bags and the lack of traction on their flip-flops, they slide further back than the cart moves forward. Stephanie and Lauren stare at the cart, betrayed, and Sid does his best not to laugh. "I can do it. It's okay," he says. He has to put a fair amount of muscle into getting the cart moving, but then it's fine. There's a door close by, and Stephanie uses the sign to flag down a minivan that's almost passed them by. "Hello, Sydney," Mrs. Lemieux calls from the front seat, as the windows roll down. "Do you need a hand? We might have to do some creative bag stacking, since we just picked Austin up from practice." "I've got it, Mrs. Lemieux. Thank you," Sid says. She laughs. "Please, call me Natalie," she says. "Let me know if you change your mind." Stephanie has already popped the trunk, and sure enough, there's an Easton gear bag back there, and two curious faces. "Hi, I'm Austin," the little boy says, as the little girl waves and says, "I'm Alexa." "Hey," Sid says. "It's nice to meet you guys." They beam back at him and offer advice on how to stack the bags, but they eventually have to put Austin's bag on the back seat with him and Alexa so there's room for all of Sid's stuff without blocking the view at the back window. "You're in my seat," Stephanie sighs out, like it's such a frequent offense that she's making the argument more for the sake of it than out of actual irritation. Lauren rolls her eyes and buckles her seatbelt pointedly. "Oh my God, they're the same seat," she says. "Girls," Natalie says gently. "Sydney, come sit in the front and don't listen. They're still arguing about a spilled Coke from a year ago."
"It was a milkshake,"
Stephanie protests, and Natalie shakes her head wryly as she starts the car. "It was a milkshake," she says, in an apologetic tone that still manages to sound amused and point out the ridiculousness of all of it. Sid's mother uses it all the time, so it must be a mom thing. "I hope your flight was okay. Mary said it left pretty early. When we get home, you can have some peace and quiet before we show you around." She shoots a pointed look to the back seat on peace and quiet, and Austin makes a face.
"But Stephanie and Lauren already got to talk to him,"
he says, sounding annoyed. Natalie is opening her mouth to say something, but Sid quickly says, "I'm not tired at all. I wanted to thank you, though, for letting me stay with you. I really appreciate it." He turns around to face the back seat. "Thank you guys, too. I'll try not to be too much of a drag, I promise." Alexa giggles, and Austin's sulky expression turns into a grin. Stephanie shoots a delighted look at Lauren, who's smiling out the window.
"You'll probably be okay,"
Lauren says, before turning to smile at Sid.
"But we only have four controllers, so you'll have to wait your turn for Mario Kart."
"Oh yeah?" Sid asks. "Who do you guys play as?"
"Yoshi!"
Stephanie says loudest, over a chorus of
"Peach!
Mario!"
and
"Bowser!"
The rest of the drive is consumed with video games, Austin and Stephanie's hockey teams, and the day camp Lauren is going to for band practice. Natalie keeps sneaking little looks at Sid out of the corner of her eye, but going by the smile on her face, it's nothing bad, so Sid just asks another question, this time about Alexa's art lessons. Soon, they pull into the driveway. Natalie interrupts the conversation to teach Sid the gate code. The house is intimidatingly huge, but the inside is cozy, with shoes lined up in the mudroom just like in his parents' house. The kids are happy to show him around, pointing out the pool through the living room windows and showing him the stairway down to the basement. Despite what he'd said earlier, he's starting to fade, but the kids are so excited to share their home with him that he can't bring himself to say anything. "I'll show you to your room now, Sydney," Natalie says firmly, going on to add in French, "He's tired. Go on. Shoo."
There's some grumbling, but clearly the conversation in the car sparked the need for a Mario Kart battle, so the four of them troop down into the basement.
Thank you, Natalie says to Sydney. You have no idea how excited they are to have you here. They've been dying to meet you since Maria said you'd agreed to stay with us. You're very good with them.
Sid ducks his head, cheeks warm with the unexpected compliment. I'm really happy to be here, he says. Please let me know what I can do around the house. I want to help out.
Natalie smiles at him warmly. I'll let you know, Sydney. Or do you prefer Sid?
Oh, either's fine, he says, following her up the stairs. The guest room is actually more of a little suite, nestled in the eaves of the house. The ceiling slopes back and forth under the gables. Natalie points out the kitchenette and living room before leading him into a big, open bedroom. If you need anything, I'll be downstairs in my office. It's just off the kitchen, Natalie says. If you want anything from your suitcases, we can go get them and send them up in the elevator, but I'm guessing you'll just want to rest.
I should call my parents first, he says.
Natalie nods to the phone on the wall. Feel free. It's on a separate line, so you don't have to worry about tying up the phone.
Thanks, Sid says gratefully.
He probably should get a U.S. cell phone soon, but he's glad to have permission to use the landline. It makes him feel a little more like he really lives here, and isn't just a house guest. He has endorsement deals, and he'll be signing a contract in a few weeks. He can pay the bill. Only his mom is home when he calls, and she asks him how his flight was and how he likes his room, and it's all very ordinary and comforting. They don't talk long. She has some errands to run, and tells him to get some rest.
I love you, he tells her.
I love you too, baby,
she says.
Get some sleep. You'll want to be well rested for camp tomorrow.
Yeah, he says. He doesn't quite want to hang up, but she's right, and it's not like he can't call again soon. Bye, Mom.
Bye, honey,
she says, and the line goes dead. He puts the phone back in the cradle and heads off to the bedroom. It really is big, with windows that let in a lot of light. There's a little sitting room off to one side, with a pair of chairs and a small table. He guesses the Lemieux intended this place for their parents, and he hopes he won't cause any trouble by living here when they come to visit. The air conditioning is a little chill, but there's a big sunbeam across the bed, and Sid lies down on top of the covers. He sets an alarm on his phone to wake him up in a few hours so he doesn't sleep the day away or miss dinner. The last thing he notices as he's drifting off is a metallic clinking sound and a waffle before the bed shifts under him. Sid wakes up with a warm, heavy weight on his hip and looks down to find the head of a beautiful chocolate lab there. A second later, the dog blinks and wuffs at him, staring back solemnly. A glance at his phone lets him know he didn't sleep through his alarm, but it's still closer to evening than afternoon. The dog's ears perk up, and it gets down off the bed, heading for the door to the living room. Sid figures that's as good an idea as any, so after splashing some water on his face, he heads back downstairs. By the time he gets to the first floor landing, he can hear laughter and smell something good, which speeds him up a little. It sounds like everything is coming from the kitchen. Sure enough, the kids are lined up on stools along the breakfast bar, and Natalie is working on a salad.
Hey, Sid!
Alexa says, spotting him first.
Glad to see you made it,
Maria says, appearing at his elbow, startling Sid a little.
Hi, Mario, Sid says, struck all over again by the fact that he's going to be living in Mario Lemieux's house.
Have a seat. Dinner will be ready in a little while, Natalie advises, gesturing to an open stool. I thought you might be hungry already, though, so if they left anything, there are some snacks on the counter. Sid's basically hungry all the time, so that sounds pretty good to him. He sits on his stool and reaches for the veggie platter.
Thanks, he says, before decimating all the carrots on the plate. There's also a plate of crackers and cheese that is calling his name, and he's happy to snack while the kids tell Maria about their day.
The dog who slept with him pads up, sitting under his feet, hopefully. Or at least he thinks it's the same dog, but then another brown lab appears to drink out of a nearby water bowl.
The kids introduce him to Tara and Lola, who cheerfully sniff the hand he extends. Everything feels sort of perfect. Kids laughing, dogs roaming around, the smell of fresh, hot potato salad wafting through the air. "Time for the grill," Natalie says, handing off a platter of hamburger patties to Mario.
"You want to help?"
Mario asks Sid. He nods, grabs a couple of sticks of celery to go, and follows Mario out to the deck. He expects to talk about hockey, because the rookie orientation camp starts tomorrow. But as Mario is putting the meat on the grill, he says,
"I remember you liked to golf. Right, Sid?"
Sid thinks he might have said something about that at the dinner years ago, and he can't believe Mario remembers that. "I do," Sid agrees. "I'm not really, good at it, though."
"If you want, I could use a partner," Mario offers. "I try to take Austin sometimes, but he gets bored around the sixth hole."
"Sure," Sid says quickly. "Anytime."
"Weather's supposed to be good in the coming week. You don't mind sticking around after camp?"
Mario asks. "Only if you guys don't mind," Sid says. Mario flips a burger and looks at Sid seriously.
"You're always welcome here, Sid," he says, before going back to his grill duties.
Sid mulls that one over for a minute as Mario takes care of their dinner. Finally, he says, "I'm really glad to be here."
"I want you to feel comfortable here, because this is your home for now," Mario says. "But I also expect you to remember that this is my family's home, and there are some considerations that come with that. You should feel free to have friends over. You're a young guy, and I don't want you to feel like you're stuck here."
Mario pauses and purses his lips for a second like he's trying to think of how he wants to say something, so Sid is sort of expecting it when Mario says,
"Girls are fine to visit, but they can't stay the night."
Sid still turns bright scarlet, thinking about the conversations he had with his parents before he left Cole Harbor. "I wouldn't do that," Sid says, honestly. And not just because he wouldn't be bringing girls. The idea of bringing anyone to Mario's house is too weird and terrible to imagine. He also wonders what he did to deserve 3 talks about his non-existent sex life in as many days. Mario looks at Sid, seems to evaluate something, and nods firmly, like that's the end of that.
"I'm always willing to listen, and I want you to tell me if something is wrong or bothering you. I really think this is going to be a good fit, and I hope you feel the same way,"
he says. He starts taking the burgers off the grill, just in time for Stephanie to stick her head out the door.
"Are you ready? Mom wants to know!"
she hollers.
"Just a minute more," Mario says back. "Come on, we better not keep them waiting."
He claps it on the shoulder, picks up the platter, and leads the way back inside. The next few days pass quickly. More strength and fitness evaluations, autograph signings, and meetings with the Pens organization. In the evenings, Sid hangs out with the kids and gets to know more about his new city. When Maria mentions that he and Sid are going golfing, the kids make a flattering fuss about being left behind until they all agree to go mini-golfing, which makes the news. Sid is used to being under a fair amount of media scrutiny, but not on this level. He's sort of baffled by it, because he's not even playing hockey yet. It's nice to meet some of the other prospects, and he sees some of the guys who've been traded to the Penguins since the draft, who are starting to come into town. He's between stuff and wants to sneak in a quick extra workout at Mellon where he can. Figuring every little bit now will help when the season starts, only to find he's not the only person with that idea. The guy looks familiar in that way that makes Sid think he's going to feel really stupid in a minute. He's pedaling hard on a bike, but then he notices Sid and slows to a stop. "Hi," Sid says, trying to shove his hands in his pockets, only to realize he's wearing basketball shorts.
"Hello,"
the guy says. The Russian accent makes Sid remember that early this month Sergei Gonchar was traded to the Penguins.
"Nice to finally meet you, Sidney."
"It's nice to meet you, Sergei," Sid says, trying to say it the same way Zhenya had.
"You can call me Gonch,"
he says wryly, which makes Sid think he didn't manage it as well as he had hoped. "Sid,"
Sid suggests. He's close enough to stick his hand out now. Sergei shakes it and smiles a little.
It's a little strange to meet you in person, he says.
You too, Sid says, thinking about the pictures of Sergei and his family Zhenya sent, how he knows a lot about them without knowing anything for himself. He wonders if Sergei feels the same way. How's your family?
Good, Sergei says. My wife never really cared for Washington. She and my daughter are excited for a new city. We'll have to have you over sometime, when we're unpacked. You can practice your Russian with Natalie.
Sid laughs, thinking about all the times Zhenya complained that Natalie was picking everything up much faster than him. She'll have to be really patient with me, Sid says. But I'd like that a lot. Thank you. He wonders if Sergei fell under the Brisson and Barry umbrella of Two North American, if maybe he's spoken to Zhenya recently and knows anything Sid doesn't. Have you talked to Zhenya recently? He asks, unable to resist. Sergei shrugs.
Not since I went to spend time with my family in Chelyabinsk. The front office asked if I would billet him when he comes, but with the new contract he just signed, I think he probably won't come until later.
He says. His expression turns hesitant.
You guys are still writing?
Sid feels torn, wondering if he should say something or not. He got the impression from Pat that this was extremely hush-hush, and if Zhenya didn't say anything to Sergei, he probably shouldn't either. Yeah, as much as we can, Sid says, which is the truth. It's just that Zhenya can't write at all right now. Sergei nods, looking pleased.
Maybe you'll see each other at the Olympics.
Maybe, Sid says. The thought of having to wait until February to see Zhenya again makes his heart sink, especially since there's no guarantee he'll make the Olympic team. Sergei claps him on the shoulder.
I think your landlord is hoping you're finished,
he says, and Sid turns around to see Mario in the doorway. Oh, Sid says, and then remembers his manners. It was nice to meet you, and thanks for everything. Sergei waves it off and goes back to peddling. He and Mario work out every morning, and they both seem to be morning people, so it makes sense to get up pretty early, which means Sid is in the middle of making oatmeal when Mario gets a call and frowns down at his phone for a second before answering.
Morning, Pat,
he says. His expression changes from concerned to calculating, interested.
Yes, he's with Barry.
Sid is wondering if Mario means Pat Brisson, and if it is Barry J.P. Barry? And if so, could they be... Mario listens thoughtfully, occasionally making noises of agreement that do nothing to help Sid figure out what they're talking about. After a few minutes, he says,
Well, keep me posted.
There's a pause, and Mario blinks, then glances over at Sid. He says,
Yeah, we're right here. We're about to go train.
He holds the phone out.
Brisson wants to talk to you.
Pat? Sid asks, and he can hear the shake in his voice, but he can't stop it.
Evgeny is with Barry in Helsinki now. They've been to the embassy, and now they're waiting on a visa.
Brisson says,
We're really close, Sid. I'll call Mario if I hear anything more from them, but they've got to lie low.
Okay, Sid says, his voice far more steady than he feels. Thanks for letting me know. Pat hangs up, and Sid has to make himself unclench his hand from around the phone and hand it back to Mario.
Something up?
Mario asks with bland curiosity. Sid shakes his head. He goes back to his oatmeal and tries very hard to ignore the way his stomach roils with worry. It's two whole days of Sid thinking the worst, fearing that Zhenya won't get a visa, or that Metallurg will find him and drag him back to Russia, or that maybe he'll get a visa, but then they'll find him. All he can do is focus on his routine, working out and eating and sleeping, even though he does that last only fitfully. It makes everything a little more difficult,
even if he doesn't push himself as hard as he normally would when he and Mario train in the gym in the basement. He keeps trying to nap, but ends up lying on the couch, staring up at the ceiling. Tara seems to make it her personal mission to comfort Sid, snuggling up with him or lying there with him, her serious brown eyes sympathetic. He hopes he doesn't seem so bad off that the dogs are worried about him. It's hard to focus when seemingly everything makes him think about Zhenya, stuck in a hotel room, worried and helpless. He must not be hiding his distraction very well, though, because in the middle of playing goalie for some game the kids have concocted that is part ball hockey, part singing competition, Alexa comes up and wraps her arms around his waist. "Sid," she says, "are you okay?" "It didn't even hurt," Sid assures her. The ball bounced off the pavement and hit his face, but not hard. That it went into the goal afterward is only a little aggravating. "Are you too hot?" she says, deeply suspicious. "Maybe you need more water." "I'm okay," he says. "You let us score 3 times, Stephanie says, crossing her arms. "Lauren, maybe it's your turn to be goalie." "I don't want to. It's too hot and it stinks," Lauren says, and it devolves into an argument. Sid decides maybe he does need more water, after all. Natalie is doing something with her laptop at the kitchen counter when Sid walks in. "Everything okay, Sid?" she asks, brows drawn together. "It's just a little hot outside, I guess," he says. "I'm not used to it yet." It takes him a second to remember which cabinet the glasses are in, but he figures it out. Natalie starts, mouth pressed into a line, just for a second before she smiles at him. "There's some Gatorade powder in the cabinet next to the fridge, if you want it. If there's a flavor you like, just let me know and we'll pick some up." "Thank you," Sid says, mixing some in just in case he really is dehydrated. He's pretty sure he's feeling crappy for other reasons, but there's no need to take chances. He knows he's quiet at dinner that night, but it's soothing to let the kids talk about maybe going to Hershey Park next week with friends and argue about which of them would win the biggest stuffed animal. He doesn't miss the looks Mario and Natalie shoot at him, but they haven't asked, and Sid doesn't really want to talk anyway. He just needs an end to all the waiting. He doesn't know if he can be quietly patient for much longer. The next morning, he and Mario work out in the basement. Sid is spotting Mario during a set when Mario's phone goes off. Mostly he just keeps it on vibrate while they work out and handles calls when they're done, but this time he grunts through another rap and then says,
"Can you see who it is?"
Sid keeps an eye on the barbell, but obediently leans over to look at the caller ID. "It's Pat," he says, and the sudden spike of anxiety makes his insides twist.
"Pat Brisson?"
Mario asks. When Sid nods, he says,
"Sorry, I've got to take this."
Sid helps him re-rack the barbell before leaning down to snag the phone and handing it over.
"Hello?"
Mario says, and Sid wonders if he should be pretending not to listen, but Mario catches his eye and looks speculative while he responds to whatever Pat is saying, with yes and no and okay, and nothing that tells Sid what is really happening.
"No, I agree completely,"
Mario says.
"Do you want to talk to Sid?"
Sid twitches guiltily, feeling caught out, but he takes the phone. "Hi," he says, and he feels like he should turn away from Mario's gaze, but all he can manage is to look at the floor.
"Evgeny's on a plane,"
Pat says without preamble.
"He'll be in Pittsburgh this afternoon."
Sid isn't sure what question he wants to ask first, but everything else will work out as long as he knows. "Is he okay?"
"He'll be fine when he's there,"
Pat says, which is not reassuring, and if Sid thought he was tense before, it's nothing compared to now.
"He should be arriving at the house this evening."
"Here?" Sid says, throat so dry his voice creaks.
"Just in time for dinner, if they make their connecting flight."
Sid sits down heavily on the bench behind him. "Oh," he says, hardly able to believe it, but wanting to so badly.
Thanks, Pat.
Breathe, and give the phone back to Mario.
Sid holds it out wordlessly, and Mario looks well and truly concerned when he takes the phone back. He talks to Pat some more, and then hangs up. Sid just stays where he is, even though he knows he should get back to his workout. Mario makes as if to walk past him, but then stops. After a moment, his hand sinks into Sid's hair.
I meant it, he says. I'll listen whenever you need to talk.
Sid takes in a shaky breath, and Mario rubs his thumb once against Sid's scalp before he takes his hand away.
We're expecting guests for dinner, Mario says. I have to go let Natalie know.
Okay, Sid says. I'm just going to use the treadmill.
All right,
Mario says gently, and leaves Sid to stare at the wall blankly. After a few minutes, he hauls himself up and gets on the treadmill. Sid stares at the contents of his closet indecisively, because this isn't going to be a normal Lemieux family dinner. And Mario said guests, as in more than one, as in more than just Xenia, so he really should look nice. But not like suit coat nice, he doesn't think. He settles on a blue-gray button-down and a nice pair of jeans that he had custom-made last month. He straightens out his necklace so that the 87 is hanging right where his shirt is open. He goes downstairs to help Natalie with dinner. She absently fixes his collar, throws an apron over his head, and puts him to work making a salad. She also pours him half a glass of wine. Oh, he says, I don't usually... I'm trying to decide what to serve with dinner, she says. Let me know what you think. Sure, he says, and sips it obediently. He really doesn't know anything about wine, and has no idea what he's supposed to say. It seems okay? Drink the whole thing, she says, before she goes back to doing something with potatoes. When the dinner prep is done, Sid takes off the apron and goes to the bathroom to make sure he didn't get vinaigrette on his shirt anywhere, and also to take a second to breathe. It's like there's a knot of tension pressing in on his chest. When he looks in the mirror, his face is pale and his mouth is red from the wine, and he hopes that Xenia made that connecting flight, that he's really on his way here. As he's washing his hands, he hears the dogs bark and a commotion in the foyer. He takes a deep breath, carefully dries his hands, and touches his necklace once. He comes into the foyer just as Xenia is squatting down to shake hands very seriously with Alexa, who is last in the welcoming line of Lemieux.
You call me Gina,
he says to Alexa. He looks past exhausted, but he's still found a smile for her. Alexa nods. She turns around and says, There you are! When she spots Sid, and Xenia follows her gaze. His eyes go wide, and he stares at Sid in shock. Sid knows he should walk forward calmly. He should definitely keep it together. He should definitely be cool. But he takes half a step, and Xenia whispers hoarsely,
Signusha.
Like he can't believe he's there, and then they're both meeting halfway and clutching each other tight. Sid can barely breathe, and he doesn't care. You're here, he murmurs. I was so... Xenia grips the back of Sid's neck, and his nose brushes Sid's ear, and he can hear how unsteady Xenia's breathing is. It's a match for his own.
Why don't we give the boys a minute?
He hears Mario say, and he just keeps hugging Xenia tight. He feels Xenia's fingers trace the chain around his neck, and he pulls back enough that Xenia can brush his fingertip over the 87.
Get letter?
Xenia asks softly. Yeah, Sid says, and then bites his lip. Did you get my letters? Xenia's thumb strokes along the hinge of his jaw.
I get all your letter. When everything bad, I read.
I've been waiting for you, Sid says, his throat tight. I never stopped hoping you'd come. Xenia's eyes look a little damp.
You promised cake, he reminds Sid.
Sid's eyes may not be entirely dry, either, and he hiccups out a sound somewhere between a laugh and a sob. I did. They're still holding each other close when they hear a throat clear.
Zhenya,
Sergei says, and then pauses, and then says dryly,
Sidnyusha, apparently.
Zhenya mutters something that Sid thinks is a negative, and Sergei rolls his eyes.
Sorry, Sidney, but our host is putting steaks on the grill and wants to know your preference.
He repeats it in Russian for Zhenya's benefit, who looks a little chagrined, but in no way eager to let Sid go. Sid pulls Zhenya toward the kitchen, reassured by the feel of Zhenya's hand wrapped firmly around his. He lets go when they get there, but Zhenya sticks so close that they're shoulder to shoulder. George from the front office is murmuring a steady translation of Mario and Natalie's small talk, and Sergei speaks to Zhenya in Russian and then translates it himself. It's all manageable until the kids get over their bouts of shyness, and then George laughs and begs them to slow down and speak one at a time. Zhenya is clearly charmed and determined to use what English he has.
Play hockey?
He asks the kids. Austin and Stephanie nod vigorously.
What play?
Zhenya asks.
Do you?
Me, Stephanie says. I do. Austin's a winger.
Zhenya waggles his eyebrows at Alexa.
Goalie?
He asks.
She giggles. No, Sid's the goalie.
Zhenya gives Sid a look of exaggerated shock.
Good?
He asks Sid, his tongue poking out of his mouth.
Better than you,
Sid says, and fumbles that into Russian. Zhenya cracks up, and there are a few curious looks from the other adults. George's eyebrows are up.
You speak Russian?
He asks Sid, in Russian. Sid winces and shakes his head, and if he could hide behind Zhenya, he would. He put a lot of effort into learning to speak French well enough for media scrums, and he's only put a fraction of that into Russian. He knows he has a long, long way to go. Zhenya grumbles at him, saying his name and something about good. Mario waves everyone to the dining room and heads outside to get the steaks off the grill. Natalie is pulling a tray out of the oven, and the kids are enthusiastically showing Zhenya the way into the dining room, so Sid stops and waits.
Can I carry something in?
He asks Natalie, who smiles at him. Thank you, Sid. Will you take the salad? He takes the giant bowl, which he thinks he did a pretty good job on, and carries it in, looking for an empty space on the table to put it on. Once Sid's duty is discharged, Zhenya says,
Sid,
and gestures to the empty seat next to him. Sergei is talking to Mario about something, but spares a second to shoot Sid a look that he can't really interpret. So Sid mentally shrugs it off and sits down between them, hoping no one will notice if he scoots his chair a little closer to Zhenya while he's sitting down. Sergei snorts quietly, so he probably wasn't as subtle as he'd hoped. Sid can't bring himself to care, though, because Zhenya scoots a little closer, too. The food is amazing, and there's tons of it. Conversation waits for everyone to get their fill before resuming. At first, it's mostly Mario talking about the team and how excited everyone is that Zhenya's finally here, with George or Sergei translating for Zhenya. But the kids are impatient to get to know Zhenya, too, and Alexa butts in to ask, Are you and Sid friends?
Duh,
Austin says immediately, with all the scorn a 9-year-old can manage. Natalie gives Austin a look. He squirms a little under the heat of his mother's disapproval, and only when he looks properly chastised does she say, How did you two become friends? Sid can feel himself turning pink for no good reason. There's actually nothing wrong with how they became friends, but if Jack, who's the least judgmental person Sid knows, thought it was kind of crazy, what will everyone else think? He turns to look at Zhenya, who has just had the question translated for him. But before he can really think about it, or Zhenya can say anything, Sergei chuckles.
All I know is, one day, Gino shoves this letter at me and asks what it says.
Sergei says, taking a sip of his wine.
Imagine my surprise when I saw who the letter was from.
He looks pointedly at Sidney.
And then after I read the letter for him, he goes off and I think, well, that's it.
Sergei goes on, clearly warming to the story.
He starts asking me all these questions about English, about how to say such and such, and eventually I realize he's trying to write a letter back sentence by sentence. There's some good-natured laughter. George translates for Zhenya, who groans and covers his face with a hand. Sid's interested, though, curious about anything to do with Zhenya, but especially about how Zhenya started to write back to him. So I helped him write a response, and I think that's the end of it, Sergei says, then shakes his head. A few weeks later, Zhenya brings me this 10-page novel of a letter, and I realize there is no end. Sid's cheeks are hot, but he can't help but protest. It was only 3 pages. He gets a few looks, and Zhenya says something to him quietly in Russian that he knows is a negative. He's just on the edge of maybe translating it for himself when Sergei leans over and says, "Not long enough." Zhenya nudges Sid's foot with his own and smiles. It's a tired smile, but Sid can tell that he means it. He has to smile back, because they've gone all the way from those first letters to here and now, teammates and friends.
"So you guys are like pen pals?" Stephanie asks. "We have pen pals in our class at school, and we write to them every month. My pen pal lives in Japan. It's really cool, but I don't think I could think of 3 pages worth of stuff to say to her. What did you write about?"
Hockey, mostly, Sid says, probably to the surprise of no one. "When did you send the first letter?" Mario asks.
"It was right after Zhenya got drafted," Sid says. "I asked Pat to get the letter to his agent and hoped he'd get it. So, a bit over a year now."
Mario and Natalie's eyebrows go up.
"Sounds like you did a lot of translating," Natalie remarks to Sergei.
Sergei shakes his head. "Believe it or not, they seem to have managed on their own after the first few." He pauses. "Unless you were just sending each other diagrams of plays."
"Zhenya worked really hard on his letters," Sid says, and you know he sounds a little defensive, but he can't help it. "Why do you call him that?" Austin interrupts. "He said to call him Gino."
Sid blinks and turns to look at Zhenya uncertainly.
"Oh," he says. He leans closer and asks quietly in Russian,
"You want Zhenya for you?"
Zhenya assures him, just as quietly. He nudges Sid's knee with his. Neither George nor Sergei translates that for the table. But Sergei says kindly,
"English speakers sometimes have a hard time with Russian names. He thought Gino would be easier."
The kids clearly mull that over. "I guess that makes sense," Austin allows. "It's polite to call someone what they ask you to call them," Natalie adds, which seems to seal the subject for them. "And it's polite to offer to help your mother when she carries in dessert." That gets a scramble of chairs pushing back from the table, and Sid even scoots back a couple of centimeters or so before he realizes Natalie has 4 helpers already. Sid feels a little bad letting Stephanie and Lauren clear plates while he keeps his seat, but they don't seem to mind.
"Does anyone want coffee?"
Natalie calls. Zhenya nods enthusiastically, even as Sergei says,
"Not for him, for me, please."
Mario looks over at Sid and asks,
"Hey, would you come downstairs with me? I want to get a different wine for dessert."
Sid wonders why Mario and Natalie seem to care what he thinks about the wine, but he nods. He's prepared to do pretty much anything Mario ever asks him to do. He feels a little strange leaving Zhenya, like maybe he'll come back upstairs and Zhenya won't be there, which he knows is ridiculous, but his stomach still twists a little as he leaves the room. Once they're actually in the cellar, Mario gives him a long look, like he's weighing his options. Sid feels a little like a bottle of wine.
"You've been pretty upset for the past few days,"
Mario says eventually, crouching down to look in a wine fridge in the corner.
"Ever since you talked to Brisson, was this what was bothering you?"
Knowing Zhenya is upstairs, Sid can say, "Yeah, He struggles to find the right way to explain it. "I was worried when he stopped writing back."
"When was that?"
Mario asks, glancing over at Sid. Sid pauses and thinks back. Zhenya had called from Worlds, and that was the last he'd heard of him, other than that call that had seemed desperate and strange,
and now all too understandable in context. Then there was the note with the necklace. We talked a little bit when he was at Worlds, but after that, just once, well, twice, this summer, Sid says. After the draft, Pat explained why, but... Mary's eyebrows draw together.
You were still writing to him after Worlds, he says, a little too astute.
Sid hopes the low light in the cellar is working in his favor as his cheeks heat. Well, I thought, even though he couldn't write back, maybe he could still check his email, Sid explains. So I wrote him anyway. There's a pause. Then Mary pulls what looks like a bottle of champagne out of the fridge and stands up, reaching over to squeeze Sid's shoulder with his other hand.
You're a good friend, Sid,
Mary says, smiling at him.
I'm glad he had you.
I'm lucky to have him, Sid says quietly. He thinks about Xenia breaking the rules to send him a good luck charm, and remembers a hug between strangers that made all the difference. Mario just squeezes his shoulder again, and nods toward the crate across the room.
Can you grab a bottle of cider for the kids?
Oh, sure, Sid says. He picks it up and follows Mario back upstairs. Xenia grins as soon as he sees Sid, and even though he's tired and a little bleary-eyed, he still looks great to Sid. Sid smiles back, passes the bottle to Mary to open, and sits back down next to Xenia. He scoots his chair as close as he has dared all night. He feels better having Xenia right at his elbow, and as long as he's not annoying Xenia, he's not moving. Natalie's cutting into a strawberry tart that Sid is dying to get a piece of. Ripe summer strawberries arranged beautifully on top of custard. Jenny leans over and quickly asks George something that Sid can't hear over the kids arguing about who got the biggest piece and the most cider. A moment later, Jenny turns and whispers into Sid's ear,
"Sweet tooth."
When Sid turns to look at him, Jenny has a little secret smile on his face.
"You? Or me?"
Sid asks in Russian.
"Both,"
Jenny says, laughing. The wine Maria picked out is sweet and sparkling. Sid only had champagne once before, at a cousin's wedding, and he didn't like it, but it didn't taste anything like this. It makes the strawberries brighter and the custard richer, and Sid drains his glass before he's even halfway through his piece of tart. He probably should have paced himself better, because he feels a little bubbly himself, so he focuses on eating the rest of his dessert and drinking water. He grins as Mario tells a story about a youth hockey camp he helped organize a few years ago, and the kid who wanted to fight him all afternoon. Sid's head feels light, and some of the tension slips out of his back as he presses his shoulder against Xenia's. After dessert, Natalie declares it to be bedtime, putting Lauren in charge of making sure teeth get brushed and lights go out. They say goodnight and troop toward the stairs.
"Why do you get to be in charge?"
Austin whines to Lauren, clearly for the form of it.
"Because I'm the oldest, shrimp," she says, grabbing him in a combination of headlock and hug.
Natalie looks heavenward, but she's smiling. "The coffee should be ready now, if you want to head into the living room," she suggests. Sid gets up and goes for the plates, but she shakes her head and says, "Oh, leave them. Don't worry." Mario leads them all to the rarely used formal living room. Xenia sits down first, dropping carefully onto a little sofa that has just enough room for the two of them. He pats the seat next to him, unnecessarily, because there was no way Sid was going to sit anywhere else. Natalie brings out the coffee. Sid passes on it, but Xenia takes a cup. He looks pretty exhausted. There's some discussion of training camp in November, though it's very general and mostly about how exhausted everyone will be,